dinner for some compensation is the best you can do after the fact. If your neighbor refuses to, or is unable to help cover the costs, then you should think about that before the next time you sweep. Have a good day, sir, and I wish your business the best. Her eyes lifted, looking for the pair of royal guards behind him. That was all they needed. Moving forward, the men politely ushered him out, clearing the area for the next person to present their complaint. Layli knew they would all be like this, mostly petty, often useless, and not truly worth her time. Still, this was one of the duties she enjoyed the most. In the smaller chair beside her, Connell leaned closer.
"You're good at this,"
she flashed him a smile. "I have been watching Dad do it my entire life.
And here I thought I'd be marrying some brutish monster."
He winked, proving he'd thought no such thing.
"Odd how the rumors always forgot to mention that you're as brilliant as you are dangerous."
"That's because I was neither before I stood on the sands," she teased, keeping her voice low. "I was raised to be a very good wife, so you know."
"Well, I like this wife a lot better."
He caught her hand and lifted it to his lips in a very public display of affection.
"I hope you've recovered."
She knew he meant the purging, and not the supposed tumble he'd insinuated a few minutes ago. "For the most part, I still feel a bit unsteady, but I promise it won't dull my mind any if you have other things you need to do." He lifted one shoulder in a weak shrug.
"Soon, although I honestly won't mind postponing. It seems your Sekor is adamant that I learn how to defend myself, and he's scheduled an hour with me before lunch."
Layli nodded, turning to the audience just as a delicate young woman stepped before her. Evidently, this was her next case. The girl was a pretty thing, probably near Laylee's age, with cherry blonde hair. She held her hands clasped at her waist, her fingers so tight that her knuckles had gone white, but her chin was up. One of the guards leaned down to whisper in her ear, then stepped away. Taking a deep breath, the young lady lifted her eyes, revealing them to be perfectly, beautifully green. "What is your petition before the Queen of Norheim?" Layli asked. The girl's throat tensed as she swallowed. "My name is Cherry Butrachini, Majesty. My father is Master Butrachini, the leader of the Merchants Guild. When I was 12, he promised my hand in marriage to Lord Deverick. I wish to break the betrothal." Layli sat up in her chair. Cases like this were what made her feel like she actually could make a difference. These were the reason she'd sit through hours of foolish complaints, because every so often the crown could actually help real people, and that's all Layli wanted to do. Besides, she knew Lord Deverick. That man was an ass. Chapter 5. Layli gestured to the girl standing before her, keeping her face stoic. "And why isn't your father here to ask for the annulment himself?" The girl's eyes fell to the floor. "My father has no interest in annulling our betrothal." Again, she took a long breath. "I do, Majesty." The question was why, but Layli wasn't about to ask such a thing bluntly. Cherry's beauty was the kind that made problems, usually by men who couldn't keep their hands off. That didn't necessarily mean their professions of love wouldn't dry up as soon as the girl became eligible. Then again, it didn't mean the promises of her intended wouldn't do the same, and often with catastrophic results. No matter what reason this girl had, Layli knew she needed to address it with tact. In an open audience, she couldn't ask about affairs or other love. She couldn't lead the girl to accuse either her father or fiancé of anything inappropriate. Both of those would set a precedent Layli wasn't sure the country would accept. Women had almost no rights, except those gained through marriage, but Layli intended to change that every chance she could. This seemed like a good one, if it didn't turn out to be some stupid lover's quarrel. "Is there a problem with the pairing?" she asked. "Have you discovered a distant relative or some other reason the marriage would be improper?" Those were two distinct questions, but most of the men in the room would assume she'd merely rephrased. The young woman, however, looked up with hope. "My father wants his grandchildren to be titled. My fiancé wants the lands he's been promised in my dowry. I'm the only daughter in my family. They say none of this is my concern, but I'm the one expected to do the marrying." Layli nodded once to show she heard, but that wasn't quite what she wanted.
As women, our duties are to marry in such a way as to care best for our families and continue on our husbands' lines. This is how we can provide for the people who take care of us. Few women are given the luxury of a love match, Miss Butrichini.
I am aware of that, Majesty, and it isn't my complaint. I know I will have to marry one day. I just hoped that when I do, I might live long enough to bear a child. I'm not certain that's the case with this match. A contract between men should not be a sentence for the woman expected to carry it out.
To prove her point, she pushed at the neckline of her dress, revealing a dark bruise along her shoulder. That it was visible from so far away proved the seriousness of the injury. Layli stood without thinking, sucking in a breath. Beside her, Connell did the same, reaching out to catch Laylee's hand in his. She knew it was to keep her from doing anything foolish, so clasped his palm tighter in acknowledgement.
"Who did that?" Connell demanded. "Your father or your fiancé?"
Layli lifted a hand, knowing that either answer could be disastrous for the girl. "It doesn't matter." From a pace behind her, Crush growled, proving he didn't agree. Layli ignored it.
"Is your father aware of this mark?"
Cherry nodded once.
"He is, Majesty."
"Well, I can see how this might make you fearful of the marriage, but negating your betrothal is not an easy thing for you. Our laws state that you are the property of your closest male relative. If I annul this agreement, what will your father think? Will he simply make you another match, maybe a worse one? Will he disown you? Would you be damaged more because of it? Cherry Butrichini, have you honestly considered the consequences of your request?" The young woman stood a little straighter.
"I have, Your Majesty. My father said that if I do not marry this man, then I'm not welcome back. I'm also aware that I may be held responsible for the debt incurred and could face the arena."
She lifted her chin a little more.
"And still, I came here to beg, Queen Aravati. I checked my options, and none of them are good. I was hoping you'd find the kindness to overlook that."
She was well-spoken, Layli had to give her that. She also sounded desperate. Gesturing for the girl to relax, Layli leaned closer to her husband's ear.
"Isn't it about time for your training session?" she asked softly.
He met her eyes with confusion on his face, but answered in a whisper.
"Not really. I have a few more hours before that hell."
"Yeah, but I was hoping you'd get Tristan to stop this girl before she leaves. He should be with my dad. Tell him I looked in her eyes."
"And he'll understand," Connell whispered back.
Layli nodded, but the movement was subtle enough that the girl probably hadn't seen. Her next words were barely a breath.
"Quickly, if you don't mind. Unless you're opposed,
I'm about to set a precedent to give women just a bit more agency over their own lives." The corner of his lip flicked into an unconscious smile.
"Excuse me, my dear," he said,
just loud enough for it to carry, then headed for the exit. Timoteo fell into step behind him. Refusing to explain her husband's departure, Layli turned back to the girl. This would not be easy, kind or simple, but if she handled it just right, it would be the first step toward not only helping this girl, but making sure Layli's daughters and granddaughters never had to fear the altar.
"Cherry Butrichini, you say your father will not allow you back. Are you aware that, as the law currently stands, no woman may own property or manage her own wealth unless there is no male relative of age to manage it? Those are the duties of our men. In our society, we expect them to handle the tasks we are assumed to be incapable of managing ourselves. For you, that guardian is your father. And at your age, do you honestly believe you could find a position capable of supporting yourself? If I grant this request, am I sending you to spend the rest of your years in a brothel?"
Cherry's face blanched.
"No, Majesty. There are other options. I'm not too proud to take a common position. I can cook."
"And those positions are well sought after. I'm sure you can sew, too, but that's not any better. Where will you stay? How will you find food? Should I simply send you to the gladiatorial arena to end your suffering quickly? I assure you, it is a terrifying place."
"Wolf,"
Crush breathed.
She ignored him.
"Well, girl, is your situation so dire you think your chances are better against men like my guardsmen? Do you honestly think that what you face with this fiancé is worse than the other horrors that can and will befall a woman left on her own?"
Slowly, Cherry nodded. They are. Please, Majesty, I know what I am asking, but do not make me marry that man. By your own admission, your father will disown you. You have already acknowledged the debt to repay the betrothal price. Any recommendations you may have gained as the daughter of a respected merchant will vanish along with your titles and wealth, leaving you no chance of securing a good position on your own. In other words, Miss Butchercini, you're asking me to cast you out, make you homeless, and send you to, at best, die on the streets. Do you think this is how the Crown of Norheim should treat its citizens? For a moment, the girl stood, silently shifting her weight from foot to foot without making her fidgeting obvious. Laylee watched her skin pale and her eyes flick between memories on the highly polished floor. Those pale knuckles clenched and unclenched, proving her mind was working. It wasn't a fair question Laylee had asked. She'd intentionally phrased it like that for a reason. She was daring the girl to speak her mind, to challenge the status quo. If Cherry Butchercini had the gumption to stand up for herself here in a public audience, then not only would the queen feel confident in her decision, but also the wolf. She wanted to make sure this girl wasn't expecting a handout and was truly willing to face the future she was setting up for herself. She also hoped the girl's answer would be the fuel she needed to do something about this. Finally, Cherry lifted her eyes. Your Majesty, I believe the duty of the crown is to ensure that people have the right to live in freedom and to accept their own responsibility. So yes, I do believe that Norheim should treat me the same way as any other. I should not be imprisoned in a marriage I never asked for, knowing I will suffer at best torture and at worst death for a crime I never committed. I'm also aware that the country owes me nothing, and that if I want to be more than the commoner I was born, I should strive to make my place myself. Women do not make their place in this country, Laylee reminded her. We marry into it. The girl's head slowly came up, and she met the queen's eyes unflinchingly. For most, yes. Others fight for it. All I'm asking for is the chance to enter my own arena without a shackle. Clearly, the girl had done her research. She'd also just proved that the light in her eyes wasn't faked. Legally, there was only so much that could be done, but Miss Butchercini's response had given Laylee the excuse she needed. Making her decision, the queen dipped her head in acknowledgement. Then, as the Queen of Norheim, I agree to your petition, and hereby nullify any agreements to a marriage between yourself and Lord Deverick, as you were not given the option to decline before it was signed. As a parting gift, I declare the contract for engagement in breach by the damage to your body, leaving no debts of repayment owed. I wish you luck in your life, Cherry Butchercini, because the world is not nearly as comfortable when you have no money to pad the rough edges. May fate smile kindly upon you. The sound that came from the girl's throat was a mixture of relief and disbelief. It was almost a sob. Pressing a hand over her mouth, Cherry looked up at the queen and nodded repeatedly, refusing to do anything else until one of the royal guards gently turned her toward the massive doorway. Even then, as she stumbled out, the girl looked like she was heading to her own funeral. She made her way from the audience hall in a daze. That delicate young lady probably had no idea Laylee's decision had just set the groundwork for giving women a say in who they married. There would be no way for her to know that, by declaring the abuse a breach of contract, the queen had just empowered dozens of poor fathers to protect their daughters. But this judgment really had done all of that, and no one in the overly full audience hall had even batted an eye. The only person who would have noticed was the one Laylee had already sent from the room, but she had a feeling Connell would be impressed. Laylee returned to her throne, her eyes locked in the arch of bright light that led to the front of the palace. She was looking for a shadow, a big one. Lifting two fingers, she gestured for the guard to take their time before bringing the next, but she didn't check to see if they'd noticed. Her mind was locked on the girl, whose future she'd just ruined if Tristan hadn't understood the message. Finally, she saw him. The Lion of Lenlochlian stepped before the door, standing with his arms crossed, and the girl unknowingly made her way right to him. With a sigh of relief, Laylee turned back to her duties, smiling to show she was ready. Tristan would understand. He always did. She just hoped she wasn't making a mistake. Chapter 6
Tristan jogged down the stairs from the king's suite, aiming for the grand doors of the audience hall. Not the monarch's entrance, but the public one. Leigh had looked in this girl's eyes, but that's all the prince consort said. Well, except for mentioning that the young lady was hoping to have her betrothal annulled. It was enough. It told him that whoever this girl was, she had a spine of steel and the heart to do whatever it took. She had the soul of a gladiator, and the queen hoped to make sure the poor thing never got the chance to stand on the sands. When he reached the long hall before the grand doors, Tristan slowed to a walk. Not necessarily a slow walk. He used every inch of his legs to make sure he made it in time. Echoing on the marble walls, Leigh's voice rang out in all its glory. Not the words, just her tone, and it sounded as royal as he could imagine. For a split second, he allowed himself to smile at that. His girl, the mother of his child, was the epitome of nobility, and it made his heart swell with pride. The problem was that he could never admit it. They were friends, bound together by their time in the arena. Nothing more. He was her sworn bodyguard, entrusted by both her father and her husband. That was the role he had to play right now, so he forced his face into an impartial mask as he stopped by the large door.
"Lord Oberheim," one of the guards muttered respectfully.
Tristan huffed what was supposed to be a chuckle.
"I prefer Sekor." "Yes, sir, Sekor."
Leaning slightly, Tristan tried to look over the crowd, hoping for a hint of who he was here to rescue.
"I heard Her Majesty just annulled some girl's betrothal."
"Sounds like it," the guardsman admitted. "Also sounds like she just gave her a tongue-lashing."
"The queen is in a mood," Tristan told him. "I do not envy anyone petitioning her today."
"No, sir," the guard agreed.
"Is it anything we should worry about? There's rumors in the palace, sir."
That got his attention.
"Oh? What rumors?"
The man stood a little straighter. That's when Tristan recognized him. He was one of the guardsmen who'd been on the short list for Laylee's protection. Bevan, or something like that. He'd watched as Tristan nearly broke a man's nose for saying something improper about the at-the-time princess. He'd also sworn his life to keep her safe.
"Between us," Tristan said, dropping his voice so it wouldn't carry. "I don't get out of her presence enough to hear what I might need."
The man nodded quickly as he checked over his shoulder to see if the other guards were listening.
"Some of the cleaning girls are talking about her condition. There's also been some whispering about the prince consort's lack of interest in her bedchamber."
"Connell's a private man," Tristan assured him. "But trust me, he spends plenty of time in her chambers. It's just after the rest of the staff is gone."
"They say he's never there in the morning."
Tristan forced out a chuckle.
"They wouldn't know. The only ones allowed in those rooms before our royalty is dressed are myself, his captain, and my little sister. Astrid says the prince consort is a bit of a romantic, which is why Leigh's so infatuated with him."
"I can see that," the man agreed. "He seems the type. I would have figured her to have stronger taste, though."
"No," Tristan assured him. "My little wolf pup might not like to admit it, but she has a weakness for a man who makes her feel feminine. Not weak, mind you, which is how most men try to treat her. She just likes to be treated like she's still a lady, and unfortunately, her guards and I don't help much when we push her to train so hard."
"Ah,"
the guard smiled, proving he was just as loyal as ever.
"I will be sure to tell my friends. Should I also mention that any chance of naming a temporary heir will be postponed?"
"No. I have a feeling Her Majesty is doing everything to find the right person to stand in line until she can give us what we really want. An Aravati," Tristan told him. "She's, shall we say, considering her options."
"Good to know, sir. I'll be sure to keep the knowledge very unofficial."
That's when the crowd began to murmur, proving Laylee's latest audience was completed.
"Excuse me," Tristan told the man.
Unfortunately, the crowd's enthusiasm to be the next chosen extended all the way out to the hall. It made it harder for Tristan to casually reach the door, but it also slowed the petitioners from leaving. Even though the leftmost door was reserved for those exiting, the citizens still wanted to cluster around it for the chance to see their new queen in action.
"Keep this clear," Tristan ordered the royal guards in the area. "Onlookers can stare from the far wall, but I expect a path from the audience to the exit. We don't need any disgruntled petitioners to have an excuse to act on their anger.
Yes, sir, three of them chimed in unison, before moving people back.
Tristan stepped through them, pausing to stand before the entrance. He could see the girl making her way through the crowd, even if he couldn't see her. Her head was lost among the taller men, all waiting their turn, but the shifting of their bodies showed where she went. Crossing his arms over his chest, he stood like a statue, daring to glance up at his queen. She was waiting. Even across the expansive hall, he could tell she was looking right at him. Her chin was up, her gaze was focused, and seated on that throne, she looked like a dream from the gods. Even after this long, just the sight of her made his heart flip in his chest. He loved that woman more than life itself, but right now, he was here for another. As if his thought had summoned her, the girl finally pushed through the last of the mob, and Tristan laid eyes on her. She wasn't just pretty. This girl was downright beautiful. Her tiny little waist would fit in his hands with room to spare. Her ample bosom threatened to spill from her neckline. Then there were the big green eyes filled with fear that begged a man to step in and protect her. Tristan saw it all and knew exactly why Layli needed him to help. Sending this young woman out to make her own way was like picking a lamb for the slaughter. As she passed, he reached out an arm to touch one of hers, halting the delicate thing in her tracks.
Well, hello.
He made sure his smile promised a little more than he actually felt.
Excuse me, she said, her voice so timid it was little more than a whisper.
What are you going to do now? No fiancé, no family to go back to.
She lifted her chin and met his eyes. I intend to find a job. There was the determination. No matter how scared she was about her future, that strength almost glowed in the way she didn't flinch from his gaze. Layli had chosen well, and if he was right, this girl would appreciate the intervention enough to help their plans. But he wouldn't tell her that. Instead, he asked,
Mm-hmm. And what can you do?
I'm a Butrichini. I can...
Tristan cut her off before she could finish.
I heard your family would disown you if you refused to marry this man. Doesn't that mean you're no longer a Butrichini?
She closed her mouth and tried again. I suppose that means I should find a place before that happens, so I can still use my upbringing for some good. If you'll excuse me.
She tried to walk off, but he gently caught her elbow. Such a frail and delicate girl didn't have a chance to pull away from the Lion of Lenlochlian, but he didn't want to terrorize her. Stepping closer without releasing her arm, he turned her for the hallway.
Let me at least escort you.
Carefully, well aware that there were plenty of eyes around, Tristan wrapped her arm through his.
I might be able to get you an interview with my sister. She's been looking for help. Do you have any skills that would serve as a lady's maid?
I do, the girl gasped, hope filling those pretty green eyes.
On her heart-shaped face, the look could be easily mistaken for flirtatious. Tristan smiled down at her warmly.
And do you have a name, beautiful?
Something in her gaze darkened, and her tone no longer sounded as warm.
Cherry Butrichini, sir.
I see. I'm Tristan Lyon, the Queen's Secor.
Lord Oberheim, she breathed in acknowledgement, but it came across as intimidated instead of thrilled.
I prefer Tristan, Lion or Secor. I was not born into the title, but earned it.
She nodded, dropping her eyes back to the ground.
I've heard the stories, sir. They say you kept Her Majesty alive.
Her Majesty did plenty of keeping herself alive. Quite a bit of keeping me alive, too. Those stories always try to put the credit in the wrong place. Trust me, Leilani Aravati only needed me to watch her back.
That got a smile, but it was pointed at the ground.
She's beautiful, isn't she? Cherry asked.
That she is. The perfect queen, in my opinion.
He turned, aiming for the main staircase.
Some say she's too mannish, though.
I don't think so.
Cherry dared to glance up, barely meeting his eyes before she looked down again.
She's no different from any mother caring for her children. It's just that her family is a country.
Very good analogy.
That made the girl's steps stutter.
You speak well for a commoner. Were you a merchant, too?
Farm boy, Tristan told her. And a really bad blacksmith. That's how I ended up on the sands. I was, however, a good gladiator. Granted, spending all day with someone like Lei, I mean, Her Majesty, I learned a few new words. My favorite is euphemism.
I don't know that one, she admitted.
It's a word or phrase that means something else, often something one wouldn't say in polite company.
At the top of the stairs, he turned right, leading her directly into the heart of the royal chambers.
Her Majesty wanted to learn everyone, and enjoyed making me squirm when I tried to explain the things men say when they're alone.
Men are crass, she grumbled.
We don't have to be.
Against his arm, he felt the dainty thing stiffen. That hasn't been my experience, sir.
I'm sure. Although my experience has been that those women who pretend to be so sweet and innocent are truly the most vicious. Do you think we might both be wrong?
She walked a few steps in silence, clearly thinking about that. I am not looking for a suitor, sir. Just a position.
And yet they will come for you, regardless. I'm not looking for an attachment either, but I am still expected to make one.
He stopped at his sister's door and rapped loudly.
I just thought that if my sister is able to find you a job, maybe we could work our way to friends and let others assume what they want.
Just a moment, Astrid yelled through the wood. Tristan chuckled, but didn't take his eyes off the girl.
Feel free to ask Astrid about me before you decide. If you think this might be something you can tolerate, I swear to you on Her Majesty's name that I am only interested in getting to know you better. Anyone who can stare down my best friend sounds like the kind of person who might be fun to talk to.
The door swung open on his last word to reveal both Essa and Astrid looking breathless. Tristan lifted a brow in question, but wasn't sure he honestly wanted to know. Instead, he pushed Cherry forward so the ladies could see her.
This is Cherry Butrini. Lei said she has the eyes and needs a job. Find her one.
Essa looked the girl over. Any job? No, Astrid said softly, smiling at her brother. Triss has a plan. Then she smiled at the girl. How are you with a sword? He couldn't help himself. Tristan laughed.
Not hair, not cosmetics, but a sword is the thing you're worried about first?
Yeah, Astrid told him. Look at her. She's clearly competent in the other two, and I'm guessing she dressed and primped herself. That means all we need to know is if she can lift a sword, or if she's going to need to spend time with Grigori.
Not Grigori, Tristan ordered. Armando. She's just had her betrothal annulled. Armando can show her enough.
I don't know anything about swords, Cherry insisted, her head snapping from one to the other. I was just hoping for a position as a lady's maid. Well, Astrid grabbed her arm and hauled her into the room, placing her body so Tristan couldn't follow. If you want to keep the queen happy, you're going to need to learn a few things. Go away, Triss.
Going. But make sure Lei knows what she decides. Don't need to give her anything else to stress about today.
Fine. Go away and keep your mouth shut. Then his little sister slammed the door in his face. Tristan went, but it was with a smile. Lei had just found the perfect girl to divert attention from their affair. Now, he just had to figure out how much to tell the pretty little lady and just how far she could be trusted. But she had the eyes. He had a funny feeling she'd end up on their side eventually. Chapter 7 So, Astrid said as she closed the door and turned to Cherry. You want a job. Why does the queen have an interest in you? What? Cherry looked to Essa for help. Finding none, her head swiveled back. The Secor just said his sister might be able to find me a job. Astrid groaned.
My brother is an idiot.
Okay, so how did you meet him? He stopped me after my audience with Her Majesty. I think he was flirting with me, but he tried to make it sound like we were just to be friendly. You are, Essa grumbled. The Secor sucks at flirting.
He's not that bad, Astrid shot back.
He is, Essa insisted. When he made a pass at me, I almost kicked him in the... She let the sentence die off. Had to defend myself, she finished instead. Cherry was standing there with wide eyes. Is he a brute? No, Astrid snapped. At the same time, Essa said, Yes! Seeing the girl's obvious confusion, Astrid waved for Essa to get back to work. The dress form she was using was not one they wanted anyone to see, at least not with the queen's dress draped over it. Not yet. That's why they'd been so careful with the door. The belly on the thing was shaped to mimic a very pregnant woman, and until Laylee announced her condition, her maids would make sure no one heard rumors from them. Hopefully, this new girl wouldn't know enough to assume anything. Maternity clothes were typical in a palace, after all.
Look, Astrid told the girl, guiding her to one of the few chairs not covered in expensive fabrics. My brother is a lug. He's big, intimidating, and pretty much oblivious to what most people consider manners. The problem is that when he was a gladiator, some bad things happened to him.
Cherry nodded.
Wounds?
Well, yeah, Astrid muttered, trying to find a way to phrase this gently without shaming her brother.
I meant more the reason he's not a man to be worried about.
She looked over at Essa, then decided that maybe they both needed to know.
What I'm about to tell you shouldn't leave this room. It would be embarrassing for him, and might reflect badly on the Queen as well.
Essa froze, slowly turning to pay attention, but Cherry just jiggled her head in agreement.
They sell off time with the winning gladiators. I'm sure you've heard about that, right?
Yeah, Cherry breathed.
My brother won a lot. He was sold a lot. The problem is that no one asked him what he thought about it. He wasn't given a choice.
Delicate fingers rose to cover a perfect little bow-shaped mouth.
He was raped? Cherry asked, so softly Astrid almost didn't hear. Yeah, he won't use that word, but yes.
Astrid looked back at Essa.
And he'd kill me if he knew I'd told either of you. It wasn't even him that told me. I had to hear it from Laylee.
Then she looked back to Cherry.
But it doesn't look good that Her Majesty's best friend is not only a man, but one with no wife or interest in one.
By the gods, Essa said as she made her way over. That's why he made a pass at me?
Yeah, Astrid nodded. He thought you'd blush and avoid him, nothing more.
Essa groaned.
And he didn't stop to think about how much we look alike, did he? You're right, he's an idiot. But now I feel bad.
They both turned to look at the new girl. Cherry noticed and sat a little straighter.
What? She almost squeaked. You said my brother tried to flirt with you. Can you see that he doesn't mean it? And I swear, if you tell this story to anyone outside this room, I will cut your throat myself.
I wouldn't, Cherry assured her. I wouldn't dare do that to him. He seemed nice, but I'm not interested in a husband, she quickly added. I mean, since I just had my betrothal annulled.
Oh, Essa said, smacking her forehead. Which Tristan probably knew. That makes so much sense.
She looked at Cherry.
Hence the flirting. He needs to be seen with a woman, but isn't interested in anything more than a friend. You are a very attractive woman, and will need someone big enough, scary enough, and well-placed enough to keep the suitors at bay. It's perfect.
It is, Cherry asked.
Of course it is, Astrid told her. And who knows? Maybe you two will have a few things in common and be able to do more than just talk about the weather when you make sure the people in court see you together.
Essa jumped on that immediately.
What are your interests?
I like riding. Both women burst into laughter, making the new girl's face flush.
I do. Tristan doesn't, Astrid managed. Oh, he's so bad at it. Laylee tried to teach him, and he doesn't fall off anymore, but he's still not graceful.
Oh, Cherry bit her lips together. Reading, archery, falconing, does he care for any of those?
Essa nudged Astrid's arm. I bet he'd like archery. I bet she'd like the sword.
I can't lift a sword, Cherry hissed. In response, Astrid flicked a handful of fabric from her leg and reached into the folds of her skirt, pulling out a short, thin blade.
You might if it's your size. Try that.
You're armed, Essa finished for her.
Yes, because we attend the Queen, we are. So is she.
We're not guards, but we are the last line between the crown and anyone able to make it through her chosen protectors.
And her, Astrid added. Laylee's not some simpering little flower, Cherry.
Wait. Cherry held up one hand as she pressed the other to her temple.
You want me to wait on the Queen?
Yes, Astrid assured her.
Tristan brought you here to see if you'd be suitable to help dress Leilani Meridia Aravati, or Laylee for short. Lay for Tristan, Wolf to Crush and most of the gladiators, and yes, the Queen to the rest of the country. Evidently, it's not proper for a monarch to only have two ladies in a retinue.
And you think I'm qualified to wait on her? I don't know a thing about court fashion.
No, Astrid said around a laugh. She's the one who thinks you're suitable. That's why she told her best friend, my brother Tristan, to meet you before you made it out of sight. Trust me, nothing that woman does is accidental. She also tends to set fashion trends instead of follow them.
But she said that if she annulled my betrothal, I would be penniless and forced to face the real world on my own.
Mm-hmm, Astrid agreed. And you were for a few moments. Then she arranged to get you a job. You see, she has to be careful what she does as the queen, because it sets a precedent. If she'd given you freedom and a job in the same breath, well, then every woman wanting to get out of a bad marriage would be due the same right. Not all of them would deserve it.
A precious little smile was taking over Cherry's mouth. She's even more amazing than I thought.
Oh, yeah, she is, Astrid agreed. And trust me, you don't know the half of it. The problem is that you're going to have to prove yourself before you get to do more than fix her hair, and a part of that is learning how to use a sword. So, you want the job?
With wide, innocent eyes, Cherry reached over and grabbed the hilt of Astrid's weapon, holding it up to judge the weight. I do. I want it enough that you can tell your brother I'll play his game, but if he tries to do anything improper... She wiggled the tip menacingly. I'll figure out real fast how to perform a castration. After leaving the ladies to sort themselves out, Tristan made his way down to watch the prince consort's practice session. It wasn't going well. Connell ducked back, thrusting his sword up for protection, and Timoteo's wooden blade wrapped the prince's side hard. That wasn't the part that would bruise. It was the laugh that came with it. Tristan knew exactly how much Connell hated his weapons training. But he was improving. Slowly. Much too slowly.
No, Timoteo told him. Closing your eyes doesn't help any. Means you can't see your captain, Grigori taunted. Just remember, Highness, if you want to see him, you gotta look at him.
Connell sighed and reset for another beating.
Don't need your help, Grigori. Kinda do, Your Highness. Until you can beat Temo into the ground on your own, you definitely need my help. And Grigori can't do anything else, Timoteo added. Let the poor thing feel useful while he heals up.
Grigori groaned.
I'm blaming you, Temo. Don't know how, but I'm sure you had something to do with me missing that block.
Tristan couldn't hold back his chuckle.
I think that was Lei's fault. You took it for her, remember?
Which I wouldn't have done if Temo hadn't... Grigori's mouth snapped shut as his eyes flicked to the stable exit.
Company.
All four men paused to look at the gaggle of ladies making their way closer. Wearing brilliant colors and fancy fabrics, it took Tristan a second before he recognized his sister. Dressed like that, the group looked like any other cluster of young noble women.
Is that? Connell asked, keeping his voice low.
Cherry Buttercini, Tristan informed them. Looks like she'll be joining Lely's maids.
Grigori chuckled.
Someone gonna tell her about my impressive wounding in the gladiator battle? No, Tristan said, making it almost an order. Miss Buttercini is off limits, Grigori.
The guy groaned.
Man, don't tell me you're going to threaten my job, too.
Timoteo chuckled.
Not him. Lely will. That's the one that just got free from an abusive fiancé. Or father, Connell added. She didn't specify which. Lely's got an interest in her. Something about her eyes. Fuck, Grigori groaned, then dropped his voice. Can't I at least try? You know, all gentlemanly, I'm a reformed man, you know, after my life-threatening injury. To get to her, Tristan said, his voice completely flat. You have to come through me.
All three men slowly turned to look at him. He knew what they were thinking. Lely was pregnant, the girl was beautiful, and he was most certainly not married. Tristan didn't really care. Lely understood, and no one else's opinion mattered. That it would also make Grigori cautious about wooing the girl was just an extra little benefit. Enough of one that he wouldn't explain himself.
Thought this was supposed to be practice, Astrid teased when they got close enough. Looks to me like you boys are just trying to find another excuse to lounge around and gossip.
Grigori gestured at his waist.
The physician said I'm to do nothing more than observe for at least 2 more weeks.
Then he smiled at the new girl.
Going to introduce us?
Sherry stepped forward and executed a perfect curtsy. Sherry Butruccini, my lords.
Highness, Tristan informed her, gesturing lazily to Connell. The other two are just sirs. Well, I suppose I could demand that you call them lords, but I assure you, the title is not fitting.
It's not, Grigori agreed.
And I'm a lot more proud of my uniform than my title. Are you new to the palace, my lady?
She blushed prettily. I'm not a lady, sir. Just hoping to be one of the queen's maids.
Oh!
Tristan cleared his throat, halting Grigori before the man could start.
Why are you down here, Astrid?
His sister jerked her thumb at the new girl. She needs a lesson. Has never held a sword before, and Essa needs to know what type she'll be using before we get her some proper dresses.
I see.
He looked the girl over.
Willing to try a few with me?
Those green eyes looked up and landed right on his. Gone was the timidness she'd had just half an hour before, replaced with a perfectly coquettish smile. When her teeth closed on her lower lip, he was sure of it. The little minx was actually flirting with him. I trust you, sir. And it felt like the weight of the world landed right on his shoulders. Sometime since he'd left her, it appeared the new girl had decided he'd make a nice replacement for the fiancé she no longer had. The problem was that he had no idea how to let her down easy, without making an even bigger mess of this. Chapter 8 Grabbing a selection of small and lightweight swords, Tristan gestured for Cherry to follow him away from the others. His excuse, if he was asked, was that he didn't want to make her stumble from embarrassment. The reality was a lot more simple. He needed to make one thing clear to her before she had enough standing to have anyone listen to her. He didn't stop until they were well out of earshot.
Miss Butruccini.
Cherry, please. He just sighed.
I hope I didn't give you the wrong impression.
She shook her head. I believe your sister gave me the right one. Stepping closer, she rested a hand on his forearm, the one holding the wooden practice weapons. Sir, Astrid said you're looking for a ruse, not a true relationship. Was she wrong?
No,
Have extensive duties to Her Majesty, and poor memories from your time in the arena, she asked, shifting so she could see his face. Some men have that after battle. My father was one. The nightmares from the war woke him from sleep many nights. My mother said he worried about accidentally harming others because of it, and that their marriage suffered.
Astrid told you I was impotent, he gasped.
Cherry shook her head. No, nothing of the sort. She just said you weren't ready to do more than settle into your duties as the Queen's shadow. I was guessing at the rest.
Oh.
He sucked in a breath and let the tension drain from his shoulders.
Sorry. I just know how quickly rumors travel in this place. It's taking a bit to get used to.
I'm sure, sir.
Tristan, he interrupted.
Tristan, she agreed. I still have my fiancé's bruises on my body. I do not want to be rushed into a courtship. She paused, letting her hand drop from his arm. Truth be told, I'd gladly be a single maid for as long as Her Majesty will accept me. I have no interest in marriage, so if you need someone to help protect your reputation, and doing so will do nothing to mine.
Except raise your standing among the other women of court. My wife would, of course, inherit my title and become Lady Oberheim.
I'm not going to marry you, she hissed, glancing back at the others.
I never thought you would, but the members of Lay's court will. Some of them want that title for themselves, regardless of which husband comes with it.
Oh, he nodded, seeing she finally understood his situation.
So maybe we should take this false courtship slowly. What would be a proper amount of time to get over your scandal and betrothal? A year?
A year should do, she agreed. He nodded.
I'll ask Lay to make an offhand comment about it. You are aware that we'll be seeing a lot of each other, right?
Astrid told me. She bit her lips together nervously. I like riding, falconry, reading.
Tristan chuckled. How about sword work?
Then he offered her one of the light blades.
So you know, I was a very poor man before I got chained beside the queen. Living in the palace has made me wealthy, but not any more civilized. If I terrorize you, let me know.
She accepted the sword. The only thing I'm scared of, Tristan, is making a life on my own. I need this position.
I know, he assured her as he stepped back. Lei knows, too. That's why she made sure I stopped you. She has a heart of gold and never seems to accept defeat as an option.
Cherry giggled. You sound enamored of her.
She saved my life.
By giving you a Rudy's?
No.
He smiled at the memory.
I was chained in the middle of the arena with 25 men rushing at me. Nothing but this dagger that the new Dom of Lanmont had managed to slip to me before I went in. As the gong sounded, I braced for my death. But she was there. Dressed in this disgusting pink dress, hiked up to her knees, she'd taken some gladiator's weapons and was running at me, killing men along the way. She tossed me a sword, made a few more kills, then dove into the madness to cover my back.
Blinking, he lifted his eyes.
She saved me, Cherry. The Princess of Norheim could have pretended like we'd never met. She could have accepted it when the guards said they couldn't stop the fight. Instead, she risked her own life for a stupid farm boy from Lenlochlian who couldn't afford to pay his bills. Yeah, I'm a little enamored of her. I think most gladiators are.
She sounds magnificent. He nodded.
She is. That's why everyone who serves in her inner circle is willing to give their life so that the wolf will stay on the throne.
Then he lifted a brow.
You willing to do the same?
She looked down at the flimsy wooden sword. I'd like to think so. I've never had to ask myself that before, though.
Well, my goal is to make sure you survive it if you ever try.
He tipped his head to her weapon.
Hold that up like it will save your life.
She did, grasping the hilt with both hands. Tristan cocked his head slightly, then lifted his own practice sword. Slowly he tapped at her blade, judging her reaction to the sound and the vibrations that would travel to her wrists. After the second hit, she adjusted, pulling her elbows in. On the third one, the tip began to droop.
Okay,
he told her, grabbing another from those he brought out.
Try this one instead. Same thing.
Over and over, he tapped and smacked at her sword, waiting to see how long she could hold it and which seemed most comfortable. Unlike a proper weapons instructor, he didn't try to teach her any fancy stances. He'd found people fought better using their own natural style, just like Lely had. The queen never held her weapon up before a fight. She used the momentum of raising her sword to add strength. She depended on the bravado of her pose to intimidate anyone foolish enough to stand against her. Cherry, however, wasn't as brazen. No, she was elegant and refined, using her whole body to control her sword. That she'd instinctively grabbed it with both hands. On impulse, Tristan pulled the flame of Oberheim from the sheath on his back and passed it over.
Try this one. It's heavy.
When the girl took it, she surged forward at the weight. Unlike the wooden swords, this one was pure steel, made so long ago that no one could remember the techniques used in its creation. The jewels on the hilt weren't just for decoration. They served to counterbalance the massive thing's bulk so a normal man could wield it. The problem was that Cherry seemed to be neither normal nor a man.
Now improvise,
he ordered before striking at the sword with his wooden replica. She tried. Using her knees, the girl juggled the weight. When he knocked it off center, she didn't try to stop it, instead bringing the weapon around in an arc. His eyes nearly popped out of his head. This tiny little nymph was meant for a great sword. When he tapped it back the other way, she corrected by pushing the weapon out, giving her more space to breathe. All he could do was wave for her to lower the blade and call out for Timoteo.
Temo, I need your opinion.
In a few seconds, the captain of the Prince Consort's guard jogged toward them. The black and white stripes of his uniform made him hard to look at in motion, but that was partially why he'd chosen the pattern. That it also made it clear Connell was neither monarch nor heir, but somewhere in between, worked as an added benefit.
Connell's with the girls, he said when he stopped outside their sparring circle. And Grigori can't swing a sword yet, so make this fast. Don't want him without a guard. Yeah, Tristan grumbled. Just tell me what you see.
He gestured for Cherry to lift her weapon again. She did, struggling with the weight of it. When Tristan moved to bat at her blade, she shifted, using her shoulders and torso to move the weapon while staying behind it. Timoteo huffed and waved them both down. His head bobbed in appreciation.
She clearly needs a two-handed weapon and something long enough to cover her body.
Timoteo picked at his lamp.
The great sword's too heavy.
Right, Tristan agreed.
Do we have any long swords that are light? Two-handed, preferably double-edged?
Timoteo chewed at his lamp.
Closest would be what the king, I mean the royal father, uses. She could probably use a hand and a half as a two-hander, too. And Ilario might be able to help us find just the right one. Good idea.
Waiting for Timoteo to return to his duty, Tristan smiled back at Cherry.
How would you like to meet the man who used to rule Norheim?
The king?
Royal father, now. We still refer to him as His Majesty, though, whether he likes it or not.
She smiled brightly. I'd be honored. Tristan took his sword from her hands and returned it to his sheath, before retrieving the extra practice weapons they'd carried out.
Good. Let's put these up, and I'll introduce you to him. I should warn you, though. He's given up his respectable ways in his retirement.
I was engaged to marry Lord Deverick. I can't imagine anyone less respectable, sir.
Still Tristan, he reminded her,
catching her arm to loop it through his. The smile she gave him was radiant. It'll take me a while, Tristan, but I'm glad I've already made one friend.
Me too. You have no idea what a favor you're doing me.
Or you, me. When they paused to restack the weapons, he got a pretty good idea of what kind of favor he was doing. Grigori just couldn't help himself. He all but leered, raking over the girl with his eyes and an overly friendly smile. The whole time, Cherry refused to release Tristan's arm, clutching him like a lifeline. On impulse, he shifted to pull her protectively against his side, shielding her with the bulk of his body. The appreciative smile she flashed him made it worth it. He could only guess what horrors her former fiancé had subjected her to. Grigori's bold manner probably made her think he was the same kind of man. He really wasn't, but she'd have to learn that for herself.
I'm taking Miss Butrachini to see Ilario, he informed the group. If Lei is looking for me, we'll probably be there. Who's on the Queen's guard? Grigori asked.
Tristan smiled.
Crush. I gave the rest some time to themselves while she's in the audience.
Makes sense, Grigori agreed.
There's enough royal guards around to give her time to grab a sword. If I see her, I'll tell her.
Resuming a proper hold on the girl, Tristan turned her back toward the palace. Cherry let him lead her through the stables, proving her rank by not gawking at the horses as they passed. She didn't say a thing until they were once again inside, and even then she kept her voice low. Is Grigori one of Her Majesty's guards?
He is. Currently he's off duty due to an injury sustained in the gladiator battle that he took so Lei wouldn't.
Tristan traced a line across his own midsection as an explanation.
Connell got him over the wall, probably saving his life.
She lifted her other hand to Lei with the first on his arm. So why does she need her maids to learn the sword if her guards are so dedicated?
Because this country isn't used to a queen, Tristan explained. Her cousin caused enough dissent among the nobility and placed many of his supporters with the staff. We're still finding people who are only here to make sure her rule is a short one. While she's alone with her maids would be the best time for them to do that.
Have there been more attempts on her life? He shrugged weakly and let out a lazy grunt.
Not anything serious, but yes. Two, the first never made it past Crush. The second was surprised that Her Majesty is just as deadly in the bath as she is in the arena. I suppose having a naked woman surge from the water and grab her sword was the most distracting thing he'd ever seen. It gave Astrid the chance to put a blade in his back.
Astrid killed a man? He wobbled his head.
Mostly. It wasn't the cleanest shot, so the fool was still alive when I got there. I helped him get it over with.
Just like that? You kill a man and talk about it as if it's nothing? He tilted his head toward a quiet hall.
This way. And yes, I've killed a few hundred people to stay alive this long. After a while, it's no longer shocking. Doesn't mean I want to, but it seems this is what I meant to do. After watching the light fade from enough eyes, it just becomes a fact of life. People die, and if they try to touch my queen, they do it a whole lot faster.
"And you really think I can do this?" she asked. He chuckled as they stopped before a well-guarded door.
"Sherry, you have the eyes for it. I can't tell if you'll love it or hate it, but I am sure that you'll find you're a lot stronger than anyone's ever let you think."
Then he looked up at the men protecting the entrance.
"Will you ask His Majesty if I can steal another moment of his time?" "Yes, Sekhor," the guard answered, reaching back to rap on the door.
Chapter 9. Inside, the former king was lounging with his feet on the chair beside him, sitting across from one of his guardsmen with a game of Go between them and a glass in his hand. He flashed a smile at Tristan, then saw the girl. Kicking his feet off the chair, Ilario sat up a little straighter, his eyes narrowing as he looked her over a second time.
"Excuse us for a moment, Patino. I have a feeling Tristan wants to speak in private." "Yes, Your Majesty," the guardsman agreed.
As soon as he was out of the room, Ilario lifted a brow.
"Well, I'm very curious why my daughter's most trusted guard has come to visit with a young woman on his arm, especially after our chat this morning." "It's not what you think," Tristan assured him. "Miss Butrachini has joined your daughter's, whatever they call a gaggle of maids with swords."
"Retinue,"
Ilario supplied.
"And she's a pretty one.
So what's the occasion?"
"First, I'm here to make sure I don't die to some old cripple stabbing me in the back," Tristan teased. "Miss Butrachini has recently annulled her betrothal, so I've offered her my protection. Nothing more. It was your daughter's idea."
"Ah, and the second reason?"
"Weapons advice."
Tristan smiled and guided Sherry forward.
"This young woman has never lifted a sword before, but the one she seems to naturally like is the Flame of Oberheim. It's too much for her, so I need some assistance."
"You?"
Ilario asked around a laugh.
"Tristan, please."
"I," Tristan pointed out, "have never had a problem lifting my sword, but I can think of one person who's learned to work around it."
"Ah."
The former king smiled at the young lady standing nervously between them.
"So what do you think of my daughter, Miss Butrachini?"
Cherry glanced back at Tristan. When he nodded, she took a deep breath and answered,
"She's magnificent, Your Majesty. Queen Aravati is wise, just, and as strong as every Aravati to rule before her."
"Uh-huh. Now, how about her, Sekhor?"
"Lord Oberheim is a little intimidating."
Ilario laughed.
"He's really not, and that boy is as loyal as a hound."
Tristan ducked his head.
"I definitely am. Sire, about the sword?"
"Right."
With a groan, Ilario pushed himself out of the chair and headed across the room.
"She needs something thinner, but if she prefers the length, you need to make sure it won't bend. I have a..."
He vanished through the door to his bedchamber, his words falling silent, until he reappeared with a scabbard in his hand.
"Got this flambard when my shoulder was still healing. It won't stand against something like the flame, but it'll give her a little reach."
He pulled at the hilt, exposing a few inches of the wavy blade. Tristan hummed in appreciation, holding out his hand for a closer inspection. Ilario passed him the scabbard and kept going, reclaiming his chair at the table. Then he looked at Cherry and gestured to the place his guardsmen had vacated.
"Please, young lady, sit. I gave up formality with that crown, and you look like you're waiting for one of us to cut your head off."
"I didn't mean to, sire," she breathed, hurrying to lower herself elegantly into the chair. "I've just never been introduced to royalty before." Ilario leaned over the table.
"Royal we might be, but we're not very noble."
"Bullshit," Tristan grumbled.
"Don't listen to him, Cherry. The Aravadis may be humble, but they're also the epitome of the word noble."
She smiled where her hands lay properly folded in her lap.
"I'm just thankful Her Majesty helped me. I didn't expect a position."
"Oh?"
Ilario asked, looking up to Tristan.
"Annulled betrothal. Cherry is going to be one of Lei's maids. There's no connection between the two. I'm sure Lei will be pleased to learn Astrid hired her."
"I see,"
Ilario murmured.
And I'm sure that doesn't bother you at all, does it, Tristan? It won't in public.
The two men looked at Cherry. She froze, her eyes flicking between them. They were open a little too wide, but Tristan had a feeling she wasn't as terrified as